I've said it. This is the best draft. I've been doing this for 30 years. This is the deepest draft that I've ever seen. And, you know, we felt that way even before. I wouldn't say it was the deepest draft before the underclassmen came in, but even during the fall, our scouts were talking about the senior class was a pretty good class. And you don't know what the junior class will be, so you anticipate and you know, try to predict what that'll be until you know for sure. Well, you know, that class, the juniors added into it, make it a very talented group.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Steelers.com Live at 4. I am Missy Matthews, joined today by Mike Prosciutto of the DVE Morning Show and Steelers.com, and Bob Labriola of Steelers Digest and Steelers.com. Kind of playing off what Kevin Colbert said, we are going to be recapping the 2014 NFL Combine today on our show. And guys, Kevin was saying, and he said it numerous times over the last few weeks, the deepest draft that he has seen in recent years. But with that comes a record number of underclassmen. So do you see any problems with that?
No problems other than the normal, Missy. And Kevin Colbert not alone in his assessment. There are a lot of people that think this is a monstrously deep draft, that a top 20 pick this year is equivalent to a top 10 pick in most regular years. But the trick is still finding guys that fit your style of football. Yeah, you got to get the best players, but you can't get distracted by some of this stuff that we're seeing. You can't get off course. You have to get what you need, what will work for you, guys that will fit with your team. They're out there. All you got to do is find them. And Labs, are out there every year.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, the thing with the underclassmen, you know, creates somewhat of a level of immaturity on two different fronts. Of course, you know, the obvious level is the emotional, psychological level, and that's what the interview process is for. You know, Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert sat down with 60 different players during the week at Indianapolis. Overall, the Steelers probably interviewed about 260 to 280, if you include the scouts and all the assistant coaches, of the 330 players who were there. Okay, you try and figure out what level of maturity these guys have at that point, as well as, you know, will they be able to handle getting a lot of money and all those things that come with being a professional. The other level of immaturity is a little bit of how they play the sport. You know, the new 20-hour a week rule that has taken hold in the NCAA has created a situation at the top levels of college football where the coaches only have times to teach these guys what they want them to do in that particular game. They don't have a lot of time to spend on fundamentals and technique and all that individual work teaching them the sport. And so what happens then too is you're also getting guys coming to the NFL level that you have to work on with their technique as well.
All right, we're going to go through a few of the key groups and breaking down some of the players and what they did do in Indianapolis at the Combine. Of course, guys, we are going to start with the quarterbacks, the ones that always seem to draw all that attention. Mike, I just wanted to know, did you know that Johnny Manziel's not 6 feet tall?
I did. But I was reminded a couple of times. You know, Johnny Football was the anticipated star of this thing, and you guys were there. I'm sure the circus atmosphere was appropriate. But, Labs, let me ask you a question. Mike Mayock of the NFL Network described Johnny Manziel as a combination of Doug Flutie and Fran Tarkenton. Was that a compliment?
I think he meant it as one. You know,
do you perceive it as such?
Well, you know, I when you look at results in the NFL, Fran Tarkenton is a Hall of Fame quarterback. He never did win a Super Bowl. Did go 0 for 3 in Super Bowls. Joe Capp lost that other one for the Vikings. But you know, a lot of people are piling on Johnny Football for his style of play. Ron Jaworski said he wouldn't pick him in the first three rounds. He's a random quarterback who likes to get out of the pocket and make plays with his legs in the NFL. He won't last three games playing that style. Phil Simms said he's not sold on any of the quarterbacks who are coming out in this draft. You know, just sticking with Johnny Manziel, his 40 time was not as fast as Jadeveon Clowney's. The other interesting thing about Johnny Manziel,
that's the guy he's going to be running away from, right?
Trying to run away from. The other interesting thing about Johnny Football was when he came, the day that he measured, you know, they did heights and weights first. They measured him. They were talking about he's got huge hands. What a plus that's going to be. His hands are huge. How big are his hands? 9 3/4 inches. So I mentioned that to a couple of scouts that I happen to see, you know, part of the Indianapolis Combine occurs after dark. You know, and you bump into scouts every, you know, here and there. usually at libraries and stuff like that.
The ones that are open till 1 or 2 in the
morning.
Yeah,
1 or 2 in the morning, right. They have last call at those libraries. But I mentioned 9 3/4 inches, and they were like, a big hand starts at 10, and, you know, it goes from there. So I don't know if this was a little bit of a fabrication. Well, he's not 6 feet tall, but he's got really big hands. The big hands didn't turn out to be that big anyway.
All right, and he is making everybody wait until the pro day at Texas A&M to throw. Like you said, he did have that kind of slow time in the 40. Other quarterbacks that you guys thought maybe stood out, or, well, let's start with Bridgewater. He didn't really do anything, but seems to be somebody that guys are high on.
Yeah, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, it's going to be interesting to me. You know, the Houston Texans with the first overall pick, there was a lot of buzz either from the media in Houston or, asking people in the media from Houston, you know, what are the Texans going to do? And, you know, since you only get really one shot at these guys and one shot at team officials, a lot of the interview process is the media interviewing other media. And it turned out that general consensus was that the Texans, based on their roster, will definitely pick a quarterback. Now it comes down to, who does Bill O'Brien like? And, you know, the consensus seemed to be that it was not Johnny Manziel, because O'Brien wants to be in control and install an offense that he wants run the way he wants it run. That's not Manziel. You know, is it going to be Teddy Bridgewater? Is it going to be Blake Bortles? We'll have to see how that works out down the line.
You know, you watch this thing on television and you hear a bunch of people that are supposed to know what they're talking about throwing terms around. This is regarding Teddy Bridgewater. Brian Billick, safest, no question, easiest to evaluate. Mike Mayock, most NFL ready. You hear terms, most transferable, things of that nature. He's the most ready of the upper echelon of this year's class, but he's not just going to be competing against this year's class. He's going to be competing against the league. Do any of these guys blow you away? Does this remind you in any way of the Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers,
Eli Manning?
That was three pretty elite quarterbacks. Ben maybe on the periphery of that, but a lot of people fell in love with his size. You hear some comparisons to Bortles, the Central Florida kid with Ben Roethlisberger. But, Bob, I got to be honest with you. I look at these three guys, and I'm glad I don't have to pick a quarterback this year, because I think there is almost a compulsion developing to get one, because you got to have one, whether there's one there or not. And it's not something you want to have to do repeatedly. Ask the Cleveland Browns about that.
Well, you don't want to have, if you're doing it repeatedly, you're not doing it well. And, you know, praise be that you have to get one, that attitude, because the Steelers have one. They're picking 15th. Hopefully a lot of these guys, you know, find their way up in the top 14 picks of the draft. But one more name for you. Jimmy Garoppolo from Eastern Illinois passed for 5,050 yards last year. Bill Polian said, he's definitely a first-round pick. So there's another name that, you know, we only have a little bit more than 2 full months to further analyze this stuff before the draft. So, you know, time's a-wasting. Let's
Should
get right
just
to
enough time.
Just enough time.
All right, well, we are going to get to wide receivers, but first let's talk about Dree Archer, the running back from Kent State, who proved that, well, he's really fast. You can kind of see it here from his 40 time. Posted a 4.26, came very, very close to breaking Chris Johnson's record that was from 2008. He ran a 4.24, and Archer said before, I wanted to break it. He came close. Chris Johnson tweeted he was nervous. There's a story for the day from the combine. But now let's kind of talk a little bit about running backs, not so much the guys that were at the combine, but last year was the first time in 50 years, guys, that a running back didn't go in the first round. Do you anticipate, Labs, that it's going to be the kind of the same story this year?
I think this year will be the second year in a row that a running back has not been picked in the first round. You know, you look at the class, last year's running backs, Eddie Lacy and Le'Veon Bell, nobody even close in my mind to what those two guys accomplished in college and what they showed at high levels of competition in college. Mike, you mentioned, you know, thank God you don't have to look for a quarterback this year. I think the Steelers can be happy they're not looking for a feature running back this year.
Yeah, and I think you could extend last year's class. Don't forget about Gio Bernard,
right,
who did some really nice things for the Bengals, and Monty Ball, who wound up playing in the Super Bowl. That was a great running back class that was apparently a little undervalued, because I think particularly the guys at the head of that class Le'Veon Bell and Eddie Lacy. When I say the head of that class, I mean the guys who had the most production from it. They look like keepers. And here you see Le'Veon Bell last season. Whether you go first round or second round, I think that's still a pretty significant investment. For some reason, people don't seem to be able to make that distinction with quarterbacks unless we're talking about Russell Wilson.
All right, let's talk about the wide receivers, show you their height, weight, and 40 times just to give a comparison of some of the top guys right there. We have Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, Calvin Benjamin, Marquise Lee. We have
Odell Beckham.
Yep, and I
Jarvis
can't,
Landry.
Thank you for helping me read that, Labs. Sure, I appreciate anytime. That. I should probably bring my glasses. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's any surprise, guys. They're fast.
Yeah, they're big, too. I mean, you're looking at Calvin Benjamin, you know, and Mike Evans. I mean, these two guys, you know, the planet theory was first espoused by George Young, which is there are only so many people on the planet who are 6'5 and 300 pounds who are athletic enough to play in the NFL. Well, the planet theory now is extending, I think, to wide receivers. You know, Mike Evans, 6'5, 231, ran a 4.53. You know, Kelvin Benjamin, 6'5", 240, ran a 4.6. I mean, you know, these times are, you know, fairly ridiculous speed when you compare, when you add in their size. And, you know, what's happening is, you know, what scouts are looking for when they scout wide receivers, two things. Can he get open by himself and can he catch the football? There's two ways to get open by yourself. You're either faster than the guy who's covering you or you're bigger than the guy who's covering you. And faster than the guy who's covering you is getting harder and harder to be because these cornerbacks are running 4.4. So where you go now is bigger. And bigger is where it's at right now in terms of what teams are looking for in their wide receiver core. You know, Calvin Johnson, Megatron, certainly has open eyes in this area, as has Larry Fitzgerald, as has Alshon Jeffrey, as has Brandon Marshall. I mean, these are guys who are open, A.J. Green, even when they're covered. So, you know, it looks like Mike Evans and Kelvin Benjamin have the height, weight, speed thing you're going to need in order to try and become one of that new breed of wide receivers in the NFL.
You know, not that Mike Mayock tends to get excited when he's doing this combine work, and he does a great job. I'm not taking a shot at him, but he called Kelvin Benjamin, quote, the future of the NFL. And what he meant by that was a guy that size, the right attributes that you just talked about. That back shoulder throw, outside the numbers, in the red zone, first down, touchdown, whatever. These guys are perceived as unstoppable. Now, there is a differentiation or a separation, I think, between Evans and Benjamin. Benjamin is not the polished receiver that Evans is. I think Evans' performance, and the people I've talked to, Mike Evans shot himself up a lot closer to 1 than 15 in that first round. Kelvin Benjamin, maybe that's a guy that winds up available in the middle of the second round. If you watch that national championship game between Florida State and Auburn, as I did, I was thoroughly disappointed with Kelvin Benjamin, Labs, right up until the time he won the national championship for Florida State. It was an unbelievable catch in the waning moments of the game.
And he had another catch in that drive as well on third down or fourth down or something.
But a lot of drops, not polished, maturity's a factor, all that. What did you call him? 6'5", 240 pounds. You can figure out the rest.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, what Kevin Colbert was talking about was, you know, it's a very talented group. But, you know, there are some questions about some of these guys in different areas. The question with Kelvin Benjamin is, you know, his drops. Are they concentration drops? Is it a technique thing? You know, I don't know. But you know, watching some of the things that this guy can do, you know, maybe you can live with, you know, he drops one on second and eight. If he's going to catch an unbelievable pass on fourth and two in the fourth quarter of a championship game.
Yeah, not to go into ancient history, but when Plexico Burress was at Michigan State, he was a big receiver, as he was here, and maybe not the most consistent of hands, but they had a theory with Plex. If he dropped it on second down, you know what they did?
Throw it to him on third.
Bingo.
And the difference with Plex, though, in these guys, he wasn't as big-bodied. He wasn't as heavy. I mean, Plex was tall rather than big. These guys are these guys are big.
And Evans in particular really attacks the football. Yeah. He's got the Larry Fitz vice grip thing going. Yeah. And puts it away, up the field we go, and everybody's happy.
You know, Evans just, you know, he averaged 20.2 yards a catch last year, 12 touchdowns. I mean, you know, this is a guy, big plays, down the field, big plays.
All right, let's talk about the other story that we knew was going to be a big story in Indy going into the combine, that, of course, being Michael Sam, hoping to be the first openly gay player in the NFL. And, of course, there were lots of questions for him when he took the podium.
Michael, you could kind of wish that this wasn't a story and we were just talking about Michael Sam, the football player.
Well, heck yeah, I wish you guys were just saying, hey, Michael Sam, how's football going? How's training going? I would love for you to answer me that question. But it is what it is, and I just wish you guys will see me as Michael Sam, the football player, instead of Michael Sam, the gay football player.
All right, Michael Sam getting a lot of praise laps for the job he did at the podium, but then it was time to go on the field. Not so impressive. 18th amongst D linemen in the 40 with a 4.91, and second to last in the bench press with 17 reps.
Yeah, and the other thing about Michael Sam is he really doesn't have a position as we stand here right now. I mean, he's kind of an undersized defensive end at Missouri. Some teams in the NFL are looking at him maybe as a projection as a 3-4 outside linebacker. Never really played in space. He doesn't have, you know, a lot of the instincts that are required for that kind of transition. And as you know, as you mentioned, Missy, his time wasn't really good. You know, he's not that strong. But I think that there was some feeling at the combine that, you know, what Michael Sam was under in terms of the pressure of his time at the podium in front of the media, it was like the Kardashians walked into Lucas Oil Field when he came in. I mean, surrounded by media, cameras clicking, people tripping over each other trying to get video. He handled that part. It's over. And now I think the NFL scouts want to see how much he improves at his pro day in terms of some of these times that he put up in Indianapolis. If he improves considerably, you know, he might work himself back up into the early part of the third day of the draft. If he does not, again, I mean, he seems to be a guy without a real position, a defined position in the NFL right now.
Yeah, from what little investigating I've done on this guy, I'm hearing one trick pony, situational pass rusher at best, doesn't play the run well, special teamer, if anything. He's one of those rare guys that, you know, pro football is not for everybody, and college football is not for a whole lot of people either, but you can be really good in college and still not fit the NFL mold, and I'm not sure Michael Sam fits it, because I know this much. He had 11 and a half sacks. There was a guy at the combine who had 3 sacks that people were just falling all over themselves about. Sometimes it's not about your production on Saturday. It's about your projection to Sunday.
All right, let's talk about Jadeveon Clowney sticking
with the
D-line. You like how I did that, Mike?
I do.
Yes, a lot of buzz around him, but he did prove he is as advertised.
Yeah, certainly as an athlete. I mean, if I saw one thing. Here you see him running the 40, ran a 4.53, I think it was.
Yes.
They superimposed. They made it look like Clowney and Johnny Manziel were racing. And by the time they crossed the 30-yard stripe, Clowney was ahead and pulling away. I mean, this guy is an incredibly explosive athlete. But as you know, we were talking when the show began about different levels of immaturity. You know, Warren Sapp, a Hall of Famer in his own right, said that he would be embarrassed the way if he were Jadeveon Clowney, for the effort or lack thereof on a play-to-play basis that this guy put forth last season. You know, Jadeveon Clowney, the worst thing that could have happened to him, to me, was when Steve Spurrier came out right before the combine. That's Jadeveon Clowney's college head coach. And kind of, yeah, he tries most of the time. You know, kind of gave it that limp praise. And I think Clowney's going to have to answer those kind of questions for some time.
Let's continue on the Sapp theme, because he was adamant. Quote, the film is a shame. There's no way this kid is allowing this tape to be sent around the country. You question whether he wanted to play the game. Sacks went down from 13 to 3. Do you think he was maybe thinking, I'm not getting hurt and ruining my NFL career for the glory of old South Carolina U, or however they reference the Gamecocks down there. He's still what he is, 6'5 and a half, 266 pounds, freak, beast, pick the adjective of the day. I think he's getting picked very high, and I don't think anybody really cares that he didn't give it his best effort, or so it seemed, in the 2013 college football season.
At the end of the combine, the general consensus about Jadeveon Clowney was among the scouts, you worry about picking him, but you really worry about not picking him.
Yeah, he didn't even – he ran and he jumped a little. He didn't do any of the on-the-field stuff.
No. He jumped a little.
Hey, somebody was laughing when the quarterbacks were doing that. And Brian Billick seemed to have a great time. Oh, I used to really worry about how high my quarterback could jump, you know. But that kid is just a machine. And, again, it's not what he's done previously. It's what that physical skill set can do down the road. After he gets paid. Got to get paid.
I wouldn't do it for nothing, would you?
All right, let's move on to Aaron Donald. Pursuta likes to pump up his Michigan State boys. I'm going to pump up my Pitt guy. Kind of under the radar going into there. I think the Senior Bowl performance also helped Labs, but a lot of guys definitely taking notice of him in Indy.
Yeah, Aaron Donald, I mean, he's a guy who went to Indianapolis with good tape. You know, as a senior, he had 11 sacks, 28 and a half tackles for loss. I mean, he swept all of the hardware given in college football to the players who do not touch the football, the Lombardi, the Nagurski, the Bednarik, you know, all of those things. He won all four of those trophies, and his combine numbers were unbelievable. He ran a 4.68 at 285 pounds, did 35 reps. His three-cone drill time was 7.11.
I'm here. Wow!
A little bit of running.
But for corners, and except the time that scouts look from cornerbacks in the three-cone drill is 7.10. This guy, 285 pounds, ran a 7.11. The other thing that Aaron Donald has going for him is a guy named Geno Atkins, who came to the draft in 2010 as a 6'1", 293-pound undersized guy. He ran a 4.8, did 34 reps. He didn't get picked until the fourth round. Bill Belichick said, you know, if you ask me, do it over, he should have been the first pick of the draft. So these undersized, quick interior defensive linemen that are following Geno Atkins are benefiting from the fact that the NFL kind of overlooked Geno Atkins when he came out, and now they are realizing the error of their ways. I think, you know, Larry Foote, he hit this one on the head.
Combine.
Best tweet of the combine. He was watching Aaron Donald. He said, Aaron Donald making some money in Indianapolis. Yeah. He did.
What do you suppose Joe Green's time in the three-cone drill would have been?
He might have just picked up the cones and thrown them at you.
All due respect to your three-cone analysis, I'm sure that it's worth it. I know the point you're trying to make, that he's got little man speed and that big man body and agility and quickness.
Well, plus he was productive on the field. That's what I mean. And when he showed himself the way he tested – because, yeah, he played for a 7-6 Pitt team, you know.
But as you said, he won every – the only award he's not going to win is an Academy Award. And I'm not so sure about that. He went – great season, goes to the Senior Bowl, lights
dominate,
it up. What was he, best practice player giving him more trophies. The only thing I've heard a negative about this kid is short arms.
Yes.
So what? I think he can play. I think he's proven it. I think he's very, very good.
The thing with Aaron Donald is, and I thought this when the combine started, before he put up these phenomenal numbers, and I still think it now after he did. It's more important for Aaron Donald to get picked by a team where he fits their scheme, that a team is not going to pick him and try and turn him into something else than it is how highly he gets drafted, because I really believe, regardless of where Aaron Donald gets picked and what he might get as a signing bonus when he enters the league, his second contract, like Geno Atkins is where he's going to make the big money.
All right, let's move on to Lewis Nix from Notre Dame. I know you guys want to probably talk about some of his stats. The thing I really enjoyed is when he was asked about how, you know, you lost 23 pounds since January. He said, well, I'm feeling sexier now. I thought that was great. But, yes, let's talk about
Lewis Nix. You know, obviously he is what he is as well. And, you know, you're really not looking for a nose tackle to light it up 40 yards. If your nose tackle's running 40 yards, that's in an NFL game, that's not a good thing. My question with Lewis Nix is, what is the value now of a nose tackle, run-stuffing nose tackle in this NFL? Is You know, we talk about running backs and how that position is devalued in terms of where you pick one. Not that you don't need a good one, but where you pick one. That's my question about nose tackles. Now, if a guy's only going to play a couple of downs for you, you know, do you really need to pick them in the first round?
I think it's like nuclear weapons. It's a deterrent sometimes if you have one. And if you have one, you can get the other people to do what you want them to do. Lewis Nix, the third of Notre Dame, I don't know if he is the guy. And I think they're very important, lad. If they play one down and then the other team's punting three downs later, that's a good thing. You still got to stop the run in this league. I'm just not sure this is the guy to do it. He likes to call himself Irish chocolate, and I got to give you some more Warren Sapp talking about Lewis Nix the third in the 40.
Please
Irish
do.
Chocolate is molasses. And granted, nose tackles don't have to run 40 yards consecutively very often, but I had this guy described to me by one scout as Casey Hampton with a weight problem. Think about that for a minute.
Is that
Casey
an oxymoron?
Hampton with a weight problem. So I don't know, maybe the kid from Florida State or the kid from Minnesota might be a better alternative.
All right, well, very quickly before we wrap up our coverage of the Underwear Olympics, as Labs likes to refer to it in his articles on Steelers.com. Guys, we know, and Kevin Colbert has said it, he said it last week on this very show, sometimes there's people who they don't even get invited to the combine and they still turn out to be pretty good.
Yeah, and this guy is one of them. You know, Malcolm Smith, the MVP of Super Bowl 48.
Is this your favorite play of the year coming up?
Was not invited. It's not Peyton Manning's favorite play of the year, I'll tell you that.
So
was
it's
not,
yours.
Was not invited to the combine. The guy was MVP of the Super Bowl, 10 tackles. That pick six that we just saw, also a fumble recovery. He also made a fairly significant play, as I recall, in the NFC Championship game in the end zone. Jerry Olsavsky never went to the combine. Vince Williams never went to the combine. You know, there's 330 invitations given out, and, you know, sometimes not all the best people get the invitations.
There's another guy that never went to the combine, Vince Williams, who wound up playing a lot of football for the Steelers last year. I agree with you. It's not the be-all, end-all. It remains scouting despite the massive resources that are thrown into it. It remains an inexact science. And another factor in the emergence of these type of players is I think teams maybe are more willing now to realize, hey, this guy might have been misevaluated early, but he can play. We're going to believe what we see right now in our camp or our workout and not be swayed by ratings or whether he went to the combine or not. If you're a player, they'll find you, even if you're not in the most likely of spots where the players are usually found.
All right, that is going to do it for us here today on Steelers.com Live. For Bob and Mike and Missy, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Thursday at 4:00.